Welcome to Outdoor by Four Magazine's audio edition of Issue 51. For those unfamiliar with Outdoor by Four, the magazine began its journey as a fully independent, vehicle-based adventure and outdoors lifestyle publication in 2013. Since that time, Outdoor by Four has been the catalyst for expanding the reach of overland and vehicle-based adventure travel into the outdoors market, with a focus not only on the mode of travel, whether a 4x4, motorcycle, bicycle, or by foot, but also on the adventures themselves and the people who live them. In this issue, you'll hear a sampling of stories from Outdoor by Four's print edition, including Heading North, an unforgettable expedition to Alaska's Prudhoe Bay, Adventures with Artemis, a Texas adventure with a four-legged friend, Sandstone Serenity, exploring Joshua Tree and the Anza Borrego region of Southern California, and Paddling with Porpoise, an adventure on the Sea of Cortez to raise awareness for the critically endangered vaquita porpoise. There are also a variety of additional stories in this issue you can read by picking up a copy or by subscribing and receiving a copy as part of your subscription order at www.outdoorx4.com. We hope you enjoy this issue of Outdoor by Four Magazine. The Dispatch by Frank Ledwell, Editor-in-Chief. Be prepared. As a Boy Scout, this motto was at the forefront of everything that defined what we did, whether in the field or in our weekly troop meetings. However, it wasn't until I grew older I realized how critically important its meaning is in nearly every facet of our daily lives, and particularly when exploring the unknown. Traveling into the backcountry requires proper planning. Sure, the wealth of information available online is a tremendous advantage versus the analog world of days past. However, one lesson I've learned in all my years of vehicle-based and non-motorized exploration has been this. Don't rely exclusively on technology, especially when you're in an unfamiliar area. For one, what do you do when your cell signal is beyond the nearest cell tower? If you haven't navigated ahead of time by outlining your route, you could easily get lost going or coming back from the area you're exploring. For this reason alone, I always carry an atlas and or paper map with me as a backup just in case technology fails. Additionally, while technology can provide instant access to information about most anything, the value of a field guide, whether it's for a region you're exploring on two wheels or four wheels, or by foot, is an extremely invaluable resource. Most overland adventurers know and respect the knowledge offered from resources such as Tom Shepard's Vehicle Dependent Expedition Guide, most recently co-authored by Outdoor by Four's Overland columnist Jonathan Hansen. While the book has probably more information than anyone may feasibly use in their lifetime, it has everything you could possibly want to expect and plan for when traveling fully self-sufficient. The same can be said about the various Falcon guidebooks on the myriad of subjects, whether hiking, mountain biking, fly fishing, etc. Their field guides, specifically by region and activity, offer a wealth of knowledge you can reach into your backpack for with maps and detailed tips on the subjects they cover. Again, they're an excellent resource when, yep, you guessed it, the cell signal stops and technology isn't there to guide you along your way. Another consideration is the mere break from technology while exploring beyond your front door. Getting outside and away is a reprieve from our daily lives, including the stresses of job, family, and more. While it's good to be connected, particularly in an emergency situation when a cell signal is available, it's also nice to sometimes get away from the constant glare of a screen and enjoy the moment. Flipping through the pages of a book or a magazine allows that break from technology while affording the same value of information you'd find online. So, the next time you prepare to head out on that dream adventure or weekend excursion into the unknown, consider packing not only the technology you'll be using on your journey, but also a tangible field guide and map for additional reference. You never know when ink and paper can be a blessing when things don't go as planned.
Heading North, a family's unforgettable expedition to Prudhoe Bay, by Patrick Van Valkenburg. In a world where adventure beckons and the road less traveled is often the most rewarding, our family dared to embark on an extraordinary expedition that would redefine the meaning of a road trip. Join us as we unravel the gripping chronicle of our two-week, 6,300-mile expedition to the mystical Prudhoe Bay, Alaska. A riveting journey filled with astonishing wildlife encounters, unexpected weather twists, and relentless gear trials. A journey stitched with emotion and adventure, the backstory to our epic expedition. Every journey has a story, and ours to Alaska was no different. We really wanted to explore Alaska because it's so beautiful and full of amazing sights, but there was something more. It was also about our emotions and family history. Patrick's grandfather, whom we loved dearly, passed away in August 2022. He had a special connection to Alaska, where he had worked many years ago. So our trip to Alaska was not just a vacation, it was a way to remember him and honor his memory on the anniversary of his passing. It was a chance for us to feel close to him in a place that was once his home. Guided by our trusty Jeep Gladiator, we ventured through the rugged terrains and picturesque landscapes, a magnificent collage of rivers, mountains, and grasslands unfolding before our eyes. In homage to Grandpa's spirit and to cap off our journey in grand fashion, we made a daring decision, a polar plunge into the Arctic Ocean, an exhilarating climax that perfectly embodied the spirit of our extraordinary expedition. Preparation, crafting the blueprint of adventure. Months of meticulous planning paved the way for our remarkable expedition. International travel called for meticulous attention to detail, prompting us to kickstart the passport application process a full 6 months prior to our departure. With six border crossings looming on our itinerary, it was absolutely crucial to guarantee our vehicle posed no compliance concerns. Beyond the standard precautions like ensuring nothing more dangerous than a camping knife was on board, we took additional care to prevent any meat, fruits, dairy, or vegetables from crossing the borders. In the planning of our grand expedition, we came to appreciate the necessity of improved navigation, especially considering the extended stretches of remote terrain devoid of cell phone reception. While a range of choices presented themselves, we opted to upgrade to the Garmin Tread GPS. Leveraging our prior experience with the Garmin InReach service, used on our backpacking and hiking trips, we seamlessly transitioned this valuable resource to the Tread unit. What truly captured our attention was the ability to activate an emergency response button, an invaluable feature given our intent to explore some of the most densely grizzly populated regions we had ever ventured into. To cater to the increased load of gear and supplies needed for our extended expedition, we made a strategic investment in a compact trailer, essential for augmenting our storage capacity. Selecting the right trailer was no small task, given the multitude of options available in the market, each offering a diverse set of features and price ranges. With our well-equipped Gladiator, we aimed to keep things streamlined and efficient. Space trailers stood out prominently thanks to their customizable utility cargo trailer. This blank canvas allowed us to pack our gear with Tetris-like precision, all the while accommodating a second rooftop tent where our boys would rest comfortably throughout the journey. Effective communication is essential for any travel adventure, and we left no room for uncertainty by equipping ourselves with Midland radios. To guarantee uninterrupted contact, we mounted antennas on both our vehicle and that of our travel partner, securing seamless communication even in remote areas where cell service was non-existent. In addition to these measures, we bolstered our connectivity further by installing a WeBoost cell booster, ensuring that we had the best chance of staying connected, even in the most remote locations. Efficiently organizing and accessing our gear was high on our list of priorities, and the FrontRunner Outfitter storage system emerged as the ideal solution. In a smart move, we decided to swap out our truck bed drawer system for a bed slide, which proved to be a more streamlined and effective choice. The modular Wolfpack Pros became our trusty companions, providing both durability and weatherproof storage options that seamlessly integrated with our other FrontRunner Outfitter products. Thanks to some specially designed hardware, we were able to attach some of these bins to the FrontRunner roof rack, significantly expanding our available storage space within the truck bed. In our quest to make the most of our two-week journey while attempting to stick to a tight budget, upgrading our food storage system was a game changer. Drawing from years of experience with Dometic products, we knew they were our go-to choice for outdoor gear. The decision to opt for two Dometic Go Hard sided bins to house all our dry food for the entire trip, along with some essential kitchen items, was a no-brainer. But the real star of our culinary setup was the Dometic Dual Zone fridge. It allowed us to not only store perishables, but also to freeze meat for the long haul, freeing up valuable space during stretches without a nearby grocery store. As we delve deeper into the Dometic product line, we quickly realize how their innovative gear simplified our life on the road. Our additions included two trusty water jugs, a convenient water faucet, a must-have recommendation from us, and, perhaps most notably, a rooftop tent that eliminated a lot of weight from the truck. Lastly, ensuring the comfort and entertainment of our boys in the back seat demanded a few upgrades and a bit of rearranging. Our search led us to Amazon, where we discovered handy seatback organizers, and to Frontrunner Outfitters for a soft-sided organizer placed strategically between the boys. Let's face it, spending 2 weeks in a compact truck with kids requires a little ingenuity to create some semblance of private space. Although, truth be told, by the end of each day, the back seat often looked like it had sustained a small explosion, the organizers worked like a charm for quick cleanups. Every morning, we had a simple routine. The boys took charge of refilling all the water bottles and restocking their snack pouches, fostering a sense of responsibility and independence during our journey. Entertainment on wheels, a symphony of creativity. With just over 2 weeks in the truck, keeping our sons engaged was a puzzle we were determined to solve. The back seat became a haven of activity as magnetic games, books, and an arsenal of drawing materials transformed into portals of imagination. The words of J.K. Rowling filled the air as audiobooks played, guiding us through 5 Harry Potter tales. Cameras were also a big role in keeping the boys engaged. They decided at the beginning of the trip that they wanted to document their journey with the help of a GoPro and a DJI Pocket. We also understood the importance of breaks, especially with young explorers in tow. Our preparations included scouting short hiking trails, each a pocket-sized adventure lasting 15 to 20 minutes, where the boys could stretch their legs and release pent-up energy. Picturesque lookouts became more than just a place to pause for lunch. They became platforms for shared awe and wonder. These planned and surprise pauses were the building blocks of our journey, creating moments for us to explore and connect, making our family adventure even better. Exploring Alaska's awe-inspiring landscapes and adventures with our family was a dream come true. However, we couldn't overlook the safety concerns posed by wild creatures, especially the formidable grizzly bears. Unlike our outings in Washington, we needed to be extra cautious in Alaska. While nurturing our boys' curiosity and love for exploration was crucial, their safety was our top priority. We ensured they stayed close and often had our traveling companions' faithful dogs with them. Additionally, we prepared our boys by teaching them about the diverse wildlife we might encounter. This knowledge not only eased their fears, but also empowered them to stay alert and respond wisely when encountering the untamed animals of Alaska's wilderness. Beyond the blueprint, unexpected surprises. As any explorer knows, not all paths are smooth. Gear failures become part of our journey, a testament to the trials one can expect from thousands of miles on gravel roads. Yet innovation and local support emerged as the guardians of our progress, reminding us of the resilience inherent in the human spirit. However, the rhythm of our expedition wasn't solely dictated by equipment repairs. The ebb and flow of our days was also influenced by something unexpected. Mealtime. Amid the grandeur of our adventure, dinners often turned into hurried affairs, punctuated by our fatigue. To mitigate this challenge, we turned to peak refuel freeze-dried meals, offering quick and satisfying solutions during those late hours. Crossing borders introduced yet another layer of complexity, as certain foods like fresh fruits, vegetables, and meats had to be left behind. This forced us to buy groceries each time we crossed into a new country, making meal planning a juggling act. The frequent grocery stops led us to dine out more often than anticipated, a convenience that came at a budgetary cost. Our journey, though replete with extraordinary experiences, also underscored the importance of adapting to the unforeseen and savoring the moments, whether shared around a campfire or a restaurant table. Destination Highlights, a tapestry of wonders. Each stop was a chapter in our narrative, infused with unforgettable moments. The grizzlies of Hyder, Alaska, gorging on salmon in the Salmon River, offered a raw glimpse into nature's cycle. Salmon Glacier, a shimmering sentinel of ice, held us spellbound, a testament to nature's artistry. The North Pole in Alaska beckoned with holiday cheer, reminding us of the magic in every corner of the world. Chena Hot Springs in Fairbanks, Alaska, added its therapeutic touch to our adventure, an oasis of warmth amid the wilds. Dawson City in the Yukon Territory welcomed us with a rustic charm and the thrill of a river ferry crossing. Liard Hot Springs in British Columbia soothed our souls as warm waters enveloped us amid serene surroundings. Whitehorse in the Yukon Territory treated us to a transportation museum that intertwined history and innovation, while the Dinosaur Museum in Wembley, Alberta turned back the clock to an era long past. As we plunged into the Arctic Ocean, surrounded by the rare sight of a distant wall of sea ice, as we celebrated reaching our halfway point at Prudhoe Bay. Yet, even as we indulged in these enriching experiences, our itinerary couldn't encompass every treasure. Jasper National Park's splendor and the allure of Southeast Alaska remained a promise for another journey. These uncharted territories, though unexplored, have already secured a place on the map of our future dreams. Epilogue: A journey never truly ends. The miles we covered were not mere distances. They were strides on the remarkable journey of family bonding, shared wonder, and unbridled curiosity. Our expedition to Prudhoe Bay, Alaska embodied the very essence of exploration and the eternal flame of adventure. It's a story not just etched in our memories, but engraved in the hearts of our sons, kindling a lifelong passion for exploration. Whether you're venturing a few miles from home or thousands, it's the connections made and the memories created that will endure through time. Challenges will undoubtedly surface, but for our family, they become stepping stones to resilience and unity. We encourage you, as we encourage ourselves, to prioritize outdoor experiences with your children early on, allowing them to develop a profound appreciation for our planet from a young age. These experiences will not only enrich your lives, but also leave a lasting legacy of love for adventure and the natural world.
Adventures with Artemis. Words and photos, Jenny Vigil. "Hey, babe, there are a bunch of hogs just north of where you are," I heard my husband call out with just a wisp of alarm. Except, I thought I heard dogs. Just hours before, we had arrived at Lake Tremel, a tiny fishing lake outside of Sweetwater, a small town in West Texas. He shouted this at the very moment I realized I was traipsing through an area strewn about with large piles of poop. "Deckard, come," I commanded, anxious to deter him from the company we may have had nearby. He came close, tearing himself away from his highly focused examination of each of the landmines I was carefully avoiding. The sky was just beginning to change from crisp blue to a golden rosy hue, with only an hour or so of daylight remaining. We had parked our overlanding rig, Bruce, the boss, Synchrosteen, a 1990 Volkswagen Synchro, for the night along the south side of this pocket-sized body of water. Texas is 95% privately owned, so finding little gems like Lake Tremel, quiet and free of crowds, is what we looked for while traversing this large state. We were positioned in a clearing surrounded by tall, overwintered native grasses, and nearby, a huge pile of purposely gathered dead bramble. The tower of thorny, brown plant matter stood roughly 12 feet high. Despite wanting to stretch my legs and let Descartes get out some pent-up yayas, I would have preferred a proper trail over this scrawny swath of lakeside wilderness, a hodgepodge of scratchy vines, low cedars, and cactus. Certainly I was turned off by the pooping grounds I had stumbled upon. But we weren't casually whiling away the hour until sundown. We were on a mission. A search party, in fact. We were, with a touch of panic in my gut, foraging for the fourth member of our family, 16-year-old Artemis. Our small, fiery, strong, independent cat and first-time camper, Artemis had darted away from me as I was securing her lead. Just as I reached out to grab hold of her narrow body, she entered the pyramid of seemingly impenetrable dead plant matter. We first met this apricot pink and dove gray feline in the office of our veterinarian in the late winter of 2007. She was quick to say hello, and her wild antics were constant. Determined to find a home for this tiny tiger, the office staff elected to give her a run of the waiting room, hopeful she would entertain and charm all who entered. We were visiting the office with our deaf and blind senior dog, just one of the many appointments we ushered him to in his old age. Right away, this comically fierce kitten, an elderly toothless dog, became fast friends. The connection between them was immediately obvious. Our then 10-year-old child had been petitioning for a kitten for years with no success. While I welcomed the idea with open arms, my husband was adamant, no more cats. We currently had a senior cat at home. Not even a humorous yet sincere letter from the children's public librarian, signed and sealed, would break him down. But on that cold February afternoon, Avery either provided a winning argument or caught my husband in a weak or likely busy moment. We left Main Street Veterinary Hospital with the wild, yellow-eyed girl whose undercarriage fur was as soft as the cotton that blows from the giant cottonwood trees in our neighborhood. Her well-suited name came quickly to the thrilled child, nestled between the old guy and the gal in the back seat of our car. I quickly backtracked to the boss with the contained Descartes, fearing the dogs would be fast on our trail. If I could get him in the vehicle, we might avoid further pet trouble. Back at camp, my husband quickly grabbed the binoculars and peered through them in the direction he saw the dogs. "They have 7 or 8 babies with them," he said. I instantly thought his chosen words were odd. 7 or 8 puppies?" I asked, and a brief look of confusion crossed his face. "Hogs. Several adults and 7 or 8 babies. Uh-oh." Feral pig populations in Texas have ballooned in recent decades. These groups, called sounders, can leave a trail of destruction in their path. They are powerful animals and can be aggressive when defending their piglets, of which there were 7 or 8 of them in the field just north of where our inexperienced small warrior had disappeared. We were unwelcome guests, and one of us was unaccounted for. My husband must have read my mind, assuring me, "She can climb a tree. She'll be fine." Until this moment, I had kept my worry and useless projections at bay. But knowing we were encroaching upon a land of feral pigs, my imagination began to become quite colorful and a little noisy. Have the pigs discovered us? Will they deem us too close? She was still wearing her harness. Would it become entangled in the undergrowth, locking her down even if she was capable of fleeing up a tree? If the pigs come, would we be forced to abandon this spot and leave her here? Is she going to give it her all and head back to Oklahoma? Just a handful of days before, we made the sudden decision to bring Artemis along on the 7-day adventure to the wild lands of West Texas. Our dog is always bounded into the van, ready for a good time as long as he's with us. However, we always believed the road was no place for a cat. In fact, until recently, we never even questioned why we believed this. I guess we were just certain she would be miserable, making us miserable. She is indoor, outdoor at home, free to choose by way of a small window cat door. I couldn't wrap my brain around how I would contain this unconfined animal, keeping her safe and yet free to enjoy the adventure, and didn't really try. But after selling our two small businesses and shaking loose some very pot-bound roots, we found ourselves craving the open road and the comfort of our minimal home on wheels to explore this vast country more and more. Leaving her behind began to wear on my heart. Whether she was lonely for us or not, I would be lonely for her, and felt I was letting her down by leaving her home. This internal conflict became an ongoing conversation between my husband and I. How could we include her? The previous winter, we had planned an extended trip to the Gulf of Mexico. We would be staying put in a beach bungalow and decided it would be Artemis's maiden voyage. This adventure was an absolute success. Her deep curiosity and bravery kept her entertained, and she truly seemed happy to be with her family, doing the family thing wherever. "Let's just take her," my husband blurted out. I had been lamenting the thought of her forced solitude as she lay, purring in my lap, especially considering her recent winter getaway. I know the look on my face must have been one of shock because he said again, "Let's take her. The worst case scenario is we turn around and come home." Apparently, neither of us thought about her escaping or that she would seemingly want to be free of us. Now, the worst case scenario was feeling like it would be turning around and going home without her. With the dog leashed and under my husband's supervision, I put on the cat backpack I had purchased not an hour after the pronouncement of her invitation, stuffed the heavy-duty welding gloves in the side pocket, she can be a real beast, and grabbed the crinkly bag of cat cookies. I started towards the south, with plans to avoid the area I was sure the hogs used as a toilet. Shaking the bag and making a near constant psst, 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 it suddenly occurred to me that we might be calling her away from our camp, that she still might be within the Fortress of Thorns. I quickly retraced my steps and made my way back to Bruce. I focused on the spot where she disappeared, willing her return. I wasn't sure she would think of Bruce as home, not after one day. Had we just driven her away from her trusted territory to her end days? To her doom? I was quickly losing the battle of balance between accepting reality as it was presenting itself and falling into the pain of the possibility of her never to be seen again. I could feel the seesaw of my emotions becoming heavier on the side of my fretting. And then there she was, gracefully emerging from what looked like a small black hole, a complete void into nothingness. The dark breach, looking deafeningly quiet, was about 5 inches across and 5 at its highest point, one of many minute entrances into the formidable tower. With a bounce in her step, she jogged over to greet me, with big hellos and purrs, pretty much glowing. I looked her over quickly and scooped her up and inserted her into the cat pack. She didn't resist, still humming from her adventure, happy to rest in the cozy space. I hoisted the pack to my back with a deep sigh of relief and set out to find the other members of our search and rescue party. I've spent a lot of time recently thinking about the limits we put on ourselves, these believed truths we tell ourselves, which ultimately box us in. We view speculation as certainty, allowing all kinds of stories to restrict our movements through this life. For 16 years, I have believed that I could not travel with our cat. This has limited how long I feel comfortable being away from home and how often. Sure, we have friends and neighbors that don't mind checking in on her, but leaving her has always felt like abandonment to me. That night, with all of us comfortably settled in Bruce, I found I could not sleep. I couldn't get my mind off what could have happened. For me, nighttime has always been the time when anxieties seem larger than life. The sky falls, and my usual firm footing seems slippery. I felt like we'd made a terrible mistake and should turn around at daybreak and get back home to where there was no band of wild hogs, and the biggest pile of bramble would be the pile of weeds I'd pulled up from the garden. My comfort zone became a tiny, out-of-focus, fleeting feeling. I felt out of control. Morning finally relieved me of my quiet anxiety, and I was able to voice the fret I was deeply feeling. "I think we should go home," I said to my husband. I figured he would agree straight away, grateful for me saying it first. But apparently, he had been filing away all the talks I'd given about our truly limitless nature and the power we each wield over the choices we make. Ramblings about how we are never on solid ground, ever, and that the control we feel we have is but an illusion. How can we know the future? And any kind of story we spin about how it could go is a sure way to forfeit the moments of the present we are currently experiencing, which are all we really have. He did not agree. He did not think we had made a terrible mistake. He thought we should press on and take things as they came. Why imagine problems to come? He's always held a position in the C-suite of solutions management, but I was still surprised by his insistence on this matter. After all, he was the one horrified at even the thought of a litter box in the van. The thrill I felt from this important reminder was enough to shed the doubt and questioning that had kept me awake most of the night. I saw with fresh eyes the challenges of traveling with pets and felt a renewed ability and desire to welcome and work through the challenges. I fully recognized my power of decision. I decided, in that moment, to embrace the unknown and to lean into the experience we had invited ourselves into. The next many days were an adventure, filled with new sights and new routines. Artemis, filled with curiosity, always roamed as far as her long lead allowed and became a pro at walking on a lead with the dog and me. The van became her safety zone, her home, and she jumped in and out after exploring over and over while at camp. She slipped into the role of camp cat quickly and, what seemed to me, joyfully. There was a moment one beautiful evening at sunset. The dog asleep on his bed, the cat curled up on the passenger seat, and my husband and I watching the sunset behind a rugged mesa in the distance, that I was filled with what I can only describe as future nostalgia. A nostalgia that will be experienced by my future self for the incredible experience I was enjoying at that moment. With tears welling up in my eyes, I expressed deep gratitude for each of the souls in the van with me, for the recognition of our limitlessness and the power we each hold over the decisions that we get to make that shape our reality. I was so very thankful we made the choice to bring the tiny tiger along for the ride.
Are you looking for the perfect fitting, fully customizable pop-up truck camper for your next adventure? Then look no further than the selection from 4-Wheel Campers. From classic slide-in, bed top, and flatbed configuration designs, 4-Wheel Campers has the setup you need. With extensive available custom options and precision built in Woodland, California, 4-Wheel Campers has been providing quality equipment for the outdoor community since 1972. For more information on the pop-up camper you've been looking for, then pop on over to 4wheelcampers.com. That's F-O-U-R, wheelcampers.com.
Sandstone Serenity. Words, Nicholas Bratton. Photos, Valentina Vallenotto. Thinking skinny thoughts, I gripped the sun-faded rope and eased into the vertical slot. The bulging sandstone walls of the canyon scraping against my ribs. With my friends' cameras in my backpack and a 20-foot drop below me, I could ill afford a slip. Fully committed to squeezing down the abrasive constriction, I realized that this wasn't the journey I had expected. It was so much better. Painted Canyon is one of many surprises hidden in the eroded folds of Southern California's desert. Our international group of travelers ventured on foot up Ladder Canyon and Ropes Canyon. John Bradley was a mountaineer from Denver who had driven down with his wife, Tinka, in their Land Rover LR3. Hitching a ride with them was geophysicist Jana Gustafsson, who had flown over from Sweden. Frank Marley was a search and rescue specialist from Alaska. I call Seattle home, and we all work together in Greenland, where John met Tinka. Infusing new energy to our team was Valentina Vallenotto, a safari guide from Italy. She had traveled extensively in these deserts. Her insight was invaluable for planning and navigating. At the start of the pandemic, I had dipped my toe into the sand of this landscape on a five-month road trip with my wife, passing through for a few days in late spring. Now I was back to explore it in greater depth. Our concept was to combine a traverse of Joshua Tree National Park, both its empty corners and crowded highlights, with a loop through Anza Borrego State Park over 10 days in early November. I collected Frank and Valentina at LAX in my venerable Land Rover Discovery, now ponderous with gear. Our adventure commenced in slow motion with the congested LA freeway delaying our escape from pavement. Midnight approached as we reached a wind-raked campsite on BLM land north of the park. A pink sunrise glowed above the ridges and we hustled to break camp, partly to get an early start, partly to warm up in our shady camp. An abandoned mining district borders the north side of the park, and we ascended its loose tracks surrounded by dark rock whose rusty tint belied a rich iron content. Cresting the Pinto Mountains, we stood between two major desert systems. The Colorado Desert spread to the south, the wrinkles of its sandy arroyos leading to the distant shimmer of the Salton Sea. To the west and north, the Mojave Desert lurked in the rain shadow of the Sierra Nevada Mountains, marked by rocky terrain and dispersed shrubs, the most recognizable of which is the Joshua Tree. Up here, along the broken, craggy tracks, we had the park to ourselves, oblivious to the thousands of visitors filling the parking lots along the paved roads. The next morning, I peeked out of my tent to discover we had company. During the night, John, Tinka, and Jana had rolled into our camp at Chiriaco Summit. Unable to find the key to the rooftop cargo box carrying their tent, they had slept inside the LR3. I started the stove to greet them with coffee beneath the salmon-hued sky. Reacquainted and reoriented, we set off into the park. The rocky hills gleamed in the piercing autumn morning sun. Greenland is home to vast, empty spaces, but is nothing like this arid sweep of golden outcroppings bristling with ocotillo and cacti. Tinka was enchanted by the spiny landscape, and we took our time strolling through the Chola Gardens, thronged with visitors. Our preference was for solitude in the remote corners of Joshua Tree, but certain attractions are simply too magnificent to miss, regardless of crowds. We piled around a picnic table for lunch in the shadows of weathered orange granite spires. Keen to leave pavement and people behind, we headed south on the geology trail and eased into the boulders of Berdu Canyon. Alone again, we crept over the rock shelves as the shadows spread across the steep walls above us. Exiting the park, we zigzagged through the checkerboard of irrigated fields and orchards to find the sandy tracks leading up Painted Canyon in the Mecca Hills wilderness. At the end of the road, we made camp for the night. Our layover day between parks was a chance to venture on foot through terrain inaccessible by vehicle. Clambering, squeezing, and scraping through the slot canyons under our own power was a welcome break from the incessant jostling in the Land Rovers. By late afternoon, we were rambling south past the Salton Sea, and the setting sun guided us toward our point of entry to Anza Borrego. Measuring over 900 square miles, Anza, as it is known familiarly, is the largest state park in California. Delving into its labyrinthine arroyos, the overlander instantly feels alien. I half expected to see Jawas peering out from the shadows. Whereas the previous day we had been exploring slot canyons on foot, now we were doing the same in our Land Rovers, squeezing through gaps between giant boulders and vertical rock walls. Thanks to Valentina's experience in the area, our planning was rewarded with complete solitude in the side canyons. The desert responded to our laughter around camp, with the tinkling of rockfall trickling down the cracked faces above us. Midweek in early November was the ideal time to be here. There is a magical sensation that only immersion in the desert can inspire. The dry air tinged with the sharp aroma of sagebrush, the flickering canopy of stars overhead, and the crunch of sand underfoot instill quietude amid the harshness of an unforgiving landscape. The scale of Anza Borrego magnifies this tranquility, with its crenellated canyons, sweeping ridgetop vistas, shifting dunes, and hidden pockets of palm oases. How easy it is to feel lost amid its rugged corners, alternately cozy in the narrow arroyos and exposed in its wind-blown plains. The tracks through the undulating terrain provided a continuously engaging driving experience. Unlike the park we had left, the streets in Anza Borrego had no names. We relied on Valentina's familiarity and GPS navigation to lead us through unmarked intersections and across featureless mesas punctuated with scarlet flowering ocotillo. She frequently leapt from my discovery to run ahead and guide us over rock shelves, through tight squeezes, around boulders, or down steep descents. Two of these were marked on our route as crucial technical obstacles, Diablo drop-off and Borrego Mountain Wash drop-off. These were points of no return. Creeping up to the edge of the drops, the surface vanished below the hood, and once the vehicle pitched forward, I was committed to the descent. The gradient had me hanging against my seatbelt, the rocks and ruts twisted the axles to their limits of suspension travel, and off-camber slopes tipped the vehicle precariously close to the wall of the trench through which the track carved. With my eyes focused on Valentina's hand signals, I inched down the drop, nervous about gaining too much speed. Upon reaching the broad runout at the bottom, I took a deep breath and hopped out to watch Tinka effortlessly sway down, casually lifting a wheel in the air while crawling over the larger rocks. The anxieties of demanding driving along unforgiving stretches of trail evaporated as we trundled into the town of Borrego Springs to resupply. Scrubby washes and dune remnants of prehistoric seas gave way to a verdant village green, RV parks, citrus orchards, grocery stores, and lush golf courses beneath the backdrop of rugged ridges. Disoriented from civilization whiplash, we replenished our coolers, fuel tanks, and water jugs in haste. Coyote Canyon was the perfect antidote to this contrived landscape. Climbing through a broad basin north of town, the terrain narrowed and steepened to a boulder-strewn passage that repels the advances of vehicles with inadequate clearance. In a nook of the spur Sheep Canyon, we again marveled at having the place to ourselves. At this higher elevation, the temperature was cooler, dropping as the sun dipped below the opposite ridge. A hot dinner and laughter evoked by fond reminiscences and running jokes kept spirits and toes toasty. Eager to stretch our legs, we spent the morning hiking up nearby Indian Canyon, pausing to admire the perfect symmetry of barrel cacti and the sprinkling of desert flowers. The luxury of midweek emptiness ended, as on our descent of Coyote Canyon, we encountered a steady stream of uphill travelers aiming to get a jump on the weekend. This foreshadowed more traffic on the remainder of the trip. Heading east across the northern reaches of Anza Borrego, we found ourselves once more in the sandy convolutions of tightly winding arroyos. Tectonic gorge suggested the passage of time over eons, but on this day it demanded quick reflexes. Not only did we have to dodge beach ball-sized boulders sprinkled over the canyon floor, the route was abuzz with motorcycles and side-by-sides zooming from the opposite direction. The hairpin turns and short sight lines raised our anxiety. In one frustrating brush, I saw the orange flag of an approaching side-by-side around a corner and simultaneously pounded both my brakes and my horn. This warning was lost on the other driver, who couldn't hear it above the music blaring from the stereo. The look on her face was priceless. The whites of her eyes filled the opening of her helmet as she skidded to a halt feet from my discovery. It was easy to laugh about later, but these near collisions with off-highway vehicles put an uncomfortable edge on what should have been a pleasant meander through the arroyos. Suddenly the trail deposited us on a flat, dusty plain, the Salton Sea staging area for the Ocotillo Wells State Vehicle Recreation Area. Blasted by hot wind and the piercing drone of motorbike engines, we decided to press on after topping off our tire pressures. We retreated back to Painted Canyon for our final night in the field. In a snug notch, we made camp and celebrated the completion of our journey with a bottle of scotch we had first shared a world away in Greenland. Our international cadre of adventurers had gathered to forge new memories in a landscape contrasting from our familiar office on Arctic glaciers. Having the companionship of these friends was a valuable reminder that the experience of an adventure is defined more by the quality of the company than by its adversities overcome and triumphs achieved. On this expedition, we could be thankful to have faced the challenges together and replenished our spirits in this magical desert, strengthening old friendships and forming new ones. It's worth getting lost in the ancient wrinkles of this landscape.
Paddling with Porpoise, An Adventure on the Sea of Cortez to Raise Awareness for the Critically Endangered Vaquita Porpoise by Sean Jansen. Ugh, a headwind, I murmured to myself. Of course it's a headwind. I'm at mile 216 days into a trip without a single day of tailwind. The forecast for the day was for the first El Norte, a powerful northern wind that typically howls down the Sea of Cortez from late fall to early spring. The strong tailwind I anticipated was halted by an unforecasted south wind, and for the first time on the trip, frustration got the best of me. The expletives came first, then the questions, why? I screamed. What did I do to deserve this? What are you trying to tell me? I am paddling the length of a Baja Peninsula to raise awareness for the critically endangered Vaquita Porpoise. However, standing upright at 6 feet on a stand-up paddleboard, fully loaded with 2 dry bags and 5 gallons of water, the headwind is turning my body into a sail that refuses to help me push southward. I made it to the headland to help me block out the wind. A sigh of relief came over me as I could see my next goal. If I could get around this next point, I should have been able to ride the tailwind to town to enjoy a mouthful of much-deserved tacos that I'd been salivating over for 2 weeks. I had a lot of open water to paddle before the point was even within my crosshairs. I took a deep breath and began paddling to the point. 20 minutes in, all was well. The headwind was from the south, turned into a crosswind, and slowly started helping me angle toward the point. I got halfway into the bay when I instinctively looked back to marvel at my progress, when I saw it. A wall of white. A literal sea of whitecaps marched toward me like orcs marching on Helm's Deep from Lord of the Rings. Until this moment, I had never seen anything like it. El Norte not only came early and swiftly, it nearly slammed me against the rocks, and I had to paddle as hard as I could to avoid them. I was losing. I fell to my knees and dug as hard as I could to not wash up against the urchin and barnacle-covered boulders. More expletives came. Somehow, I was able to round the point, and for the first time in over 2 weeks, a tailwind pushed me southward. I began laughing and looked far to the horizon to see my destination, 10 miles down the coast, where winds could undoubtedly carry the smell of al pastor and carne asada from town. But in the meantime, I attempted to stand again to use my body as a sail to take me to town, enjoying what should have been my fastest speed of the trip. Again, all was going well, but I noticed over the next hour the conditions began to deteriorate. Swells rose and the wind intensified. Doubt slowly crept into my mind like it has each day of the trip, but fear also took hold. With each swell seeming to rise in the height, I decided once again to kneel for safety. If I were to capsize, I thought, if I were to lose my gear, the trip isn't just over, but surviving could be difficult. Now in 3 to 4 foot waves and winds of 20 plus knots, it happened. I caught an edge and flipped in a split second. Underwater with my paddle in hand, I screamed, "No!" When I surfaced, the bottom of the board lay skyward, with pressure dings, bumps, and bruises, but fortunately no breaks or lacerations. The board is a tank. Somehow I flipped the board over to see what I lost, and miraculously, nothing was gone. The strapping system worked like a champ. However, I'd had enough and turned my board towards shore to beach and reassess. Throwing my gear onto shore over breaking waves was pretty difficult, but I was able to unload and sat on the shore with the expletives yet again. Less than 2 hours of paddling away from town, food, cold drinks, and comfort, Baja said no. There was a saying I learned up the coast 100 miles or so at the last town. Baja is a four-letter word, like love, but also like hell. Doing research and daydreaming of a trip down the near 1,000-mile peninsula with over 15 years of traveling in Baja, love was really all I knew of the place. Now on this beach, soaking wet, shivering, I am discovering the hell that Baja can also be. My trip had various mishaps during the first 400 miles, but ultimately, it has been life-changing. This trip scared me, but that's also why I was and still am attracted to it. Mexico is scary. Baja is scary. The sea is scary. I was pushed so far outside of my comfort zone that discomfort swallowed my comfortable self, digested it, then pointed and laughed at what I was before this trip. I could have opened with the story about how my portable desalination device stopped working and how I worried about running out of water. I could have told you about the drug runners I had to hide from at 4 a.m. or the 6 days of dengue fever that stripped me of energy and body fat, the 6.2 magnitude earthquake that shook me awake and left me scrambling in the dark to find higher ground in case of a tsunami. Or I could have opened with how I had to hike 7 miles to get food because I had run out after rationing for over 10 days, eating 1,000 calories a day while burning 4,000, and another severe El Norte wind event prevented and scared me from paddling to get help. On the other end of the spectrum, I could have opened with the blissful 24 miles I enjoyed without a breath of wind, and paddling water so clear even Jacques Cousteau would have to rethink a better quote than his aquarium statement. I could mention the coves that forced me to stop and enjoy them, naked and without a soul in sight, and mention the quality of fishing without any competition other than the seabirds. The starry skies, pastel sunsets, and cool sunrises captured my imagination. The dolphins swam up as if to greet me, sea turtles popped their heads up, and curious coyotes surveyed the scene. It was everything that I thought it would be, and everything I didn't want it to be, wrapped up in a burrito no local Mexican vendor could replicate. It came with spicy, flavorful, bland, scary, and questionable stomach sounds and issues that somehow, despite all that, pulls me back for more. My stomach wasn't the only thing that struggled. My mind played tug of war on a daily basis. A part of me wanted to achieve the maximum number of miles in the given daylight, while the other half wanted to take rest days and just feel the sand melt between my toes. I am halfway through my trip and winter has decided to show up. Winter in the Sea of Cortez means El Norte every day, while nighttime dominates the hours of the day. At this point, I decided to hit the pause button and return home. I will come back in the fall to once again surrender to the drumbeat of solo paddling down the Baja Peninsula. It's been 36 days and 397 miles of paddling, and I have the confidence to finish strong with a board that will be able to conquer any challenge the coast presents. And because of that, I can rest at night, despite my obsession of waiting for fall to arrive, as I salivate for the second attempt. Stay tuned for Outdoor by Four's issue 52, highlighting a myriad of stories that'll inspire you to step out and explore the world around you. Also, be sure to visit the Outdoor by Four website at www.outdoorx4.com regularly for new tips, reviews, and stories, and join our e-newsletter to stay in the loop on the latest from Outdoor by Four. You can also follow Outdoor by Four and the adventures of our staff and contributors on Instagram and Facebook at @outdoorx4. On TikTok and YouTube at @OutdoorX4 Magazine, and by following the hashtag Outdoor by Four. Until our next issue, we wish each of you the happiest of adventures.